You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera and everything in between, if you have a piece of hunting gear or a piece of hunting equipment that needs a battery, Interstate Batteries has got you covered. You can go to a local retail store, or you can go visit online at interstatebatteries.com. They have thousands of local retail shops all over the U.S., so you can go there as well. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Hey guys, welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. This is your host, Adam Keith. We're co-owners of a consulting company called, go figure, Land and Legacy. This is your number one podcast resource for all things land.
Each week, we're breaking down topics from land management, habitat management, conservation, farming practices, and real estate. We hope you guys enjoy it.
Hey guys, welcome back. Another Land and Legacy Podcast. We're somewhere in the, somewhere around 175, I believe, on Total Podcast. As you probably figured out by now, Matt and I aren't afraid to try new things when it comes to podcasting. And so we've done long-winded with Land and Legacy. We've done a bunch of different things. But overall, we've recorded about 175 podcasts. And as we've grown our business, this whole podcast started out as a way to educate, share information, and try to help you guys cipher through a lot of the fads and techniques that may not be the best practices for the land and the animals and plants that live there. And so over time, different roles have came about and different responsibilities and different things that have pulled Matt and I in different directions. And we've had to look for ways to continue to expand, continue to grow, and also still provide the service of education. And through that process, we've restored and built upon a relationship with Kyle Hedges and Frank Longcarriage, both biologists that typically work in birds, upland birds, but they have a background in different things, and really where their background is where Matt and I don't have a lot of experience. And instead of us trying to pose and tell you guys it's best, our mindset has always been find the guys that we can align with. And so these guys, they're consulting for us with Land and Legacy, so they're just as much a part of it as we are. They just weren't there at the beginning. And so with their consulting and their expertise, we kind of have tried to broaden our reach of what we can offer to you, the landowner, whether it be fisheries or upland bird or native landscape restoration or whitetail deer, whatever it is, we can help you with it. And so because of that, it gives Matt and I the opportunity to step away some weeks from the podcast. If you want to hear us ramble on this week, go over to the other podcast. We do two of them a week, but since we do two of them, this is a great opportunity where we can hand them the mics and say, here you go. And that's exactly what happened on this podcast. They took the mics, took the GoPro, and they are headed to Wyoming. And they're chasing sage grouse, blue grouse, any other cool stories they can find on their travels. So this week on this podcast right here, you're going to hear a update and some great information from Frank and Kyle as they chase birds and look at the landscape of Wyoming. So hopefully you guys enjoy it. Don't worry. We're going to jump back and you're going to be hearing probably from both of them as well as a combination of Matt and I. So we've got some consults lined up, a bunch of consults lined up, but this next week you're probably going to hear a podcast with Kyle and I, and then a podcast with Frank and Matt. Kyle and I go to a consult in Iowa, and Frank and Matt go on a consult in Oklahoma. So hopefully you guys can start becoming aware of who these guys are and what they bring to Land and Legacy. So here's a little bit of a taste without Matt and I interrupting. So hopefully you guys enjoy.
Kyle Hedges with you here today.
And Frank Longcarriage, doing a little something different. We're bringing to you the Land and Legacy podcast. Kyle and I are doing that today. Matt and Adam have trusted us to put together a podcast on upland bird hunting, the trip we've made. So we're doing that after a really successful Wyoming bird hunt.
Yep, we're on our way back. Had a good 3 days in Wyoming, and we're heading back to Missouri. And we're going to tell you a little bit about how we came up with this hunt and kind of how we figured out where to hunt and how we scouted. Give you a little intel on strategies to find sage grouse and blue grouse. And then talk about our hunt, our success and our failures and a little bit of everything. So stay tuned here, and we're coming at you with a lot of information, hopefully. So Frank, why don't you start out? How did we kind of come up with this thing?
Yeah, so I know that sage grouse had been a bird that you in particular had wanted to harvest for a very long time. I was able to go to Montana in 2006 and hunt sage grouse, and so I was able to harvest sage grouse a few years ago and had a great hunt, a very great bird. I grew up for some reason wanting to hunt sage grouse. I was always enamored with the West sage grouse, pronghorn. And I was able to knock it, you know, to get that hunt done and check that off the list. And I know you wanted to do it. And we had a friend, a buddy that works with us. And I think you talked to him about a hunt that he did in eastern Wyoming, sage grouse and blue grouse. So it was just an opportunity, I think, for us to go closer to home than Montana. And we had really good information on how to get it done.
Yeah, talking to him, you know, one of those deals you just get lucky. You get to talking about hunting with somebody at a meeting at work, and one thing leads to another, and he had some pretty good intel, and they had a really good hunt out in eastern Wyoming and saved us probably a good 8 or 10 hours of driving.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
To kill the same bird, and I'd never harvested one, like Frank said, so I was pretty excited to have the opportunity, and Frank was willing to go as well. Even though he'd already harvested them. The other draw for both of us was if we were successful with the sage grouse, there's blue grouse in eastern Wyoming. So neither of us had ever killed a blue grouse. Now they're known as dusky grouse. So we both were kind of excited about the opportunity to put another bird on our list of hunted and harvested birds.
Yeah, this was an exciting opportunity in my mind because you know, dusky grouse, blue grouse are a forest grouse species that you know, are in the mountains, something that you most people just don't go target specifically because they live in pretty rugged environments, but to be able to have them within a few miles of the sage grouse. In fact, we flushed a mixed group of sage grouse that had blue grouse with us, so that was kind of a neat experience. So they're close together, and that was a big draw for me. I mean, I would have went out just for sage grouse anyway, because it's a great experience when I went out in Montana. So I was itching to do it again. So
let's talk a little bit about, you know, what's the draw for a lot of people, upland bird hunters. The sage grouse is kind of a, you know, a life list bird. A lot of upland folks want to check that one off the list. It's, I guess for me, it's just in such a unbelievable environment, just giant expanses of openness that you can't hardly fathom if you're from anywhere, you know, east of Colorado or eastern Kansas and further. It's just amazing that the landscape they live in, but also, why don't you tell the folks a little bit about the status and why it's such a big deal to pursue sage grouse?
Right. So sage grouse are kind of the iconic bird of the West. They live in this shrub step landscape out west. They live in I think about 11 states, and they once had a much wider range within these 11 states and had a much greater population. But as with a lot of upland game bird species, most in fact, upland gabion species, their populations have declined due to habitat loss. And they've declined dramatically in some states. Some states have populations of sage grouse where they're not huntable. North Dakota is one of those. They have a small population of sage grouse, but you can't hunt them. So it's a bird that has suffered some range-wide declines in population and habitat, and that's because a lot of sage has been lost and converted to farm ground. Much like the tall grass prairie and the mid grass prairie further east, it was converted to farm ground. A lot of the shrub steppe sage land has been converted to farm ground, dry land wheat and such. A lot of it has been lost to fire. So fire suppression over the years has led to these dramatic landscape altering fires that devastate sage. Sage is a shrub, but it's a low growing shrub, or it's a slow growing shrub, excuse me. And it once it gets burned with a really hot, devastating fire, it takes decades to come back. A slow, cool fire doesn't really affect sage too much, but a really landscape-altering hot fire will really knock sage out. And then you get invasive cheatgrass that comes in, and sage grouse don't do well there. So there's a lot of factors that have reduced the sage grouse population in the West, and it's a bird that, in fact, has gained so much attention that the Fish and Wildlife Service was petitioned to listed on the threatened and endangered species list. So they went through that process, and the western states banded together. They created a large sage grouse plan. A group of states got together and did a sage grouse conservation plan. It's a really great idea. It's a collaborative idea, and because of this plan and because of the scope of what the states were going to do to enhance sage grouse protections, the Fish and Wildlife Service did not list the bird as threatened or endangered. So it's not listed, but they review that every 5 years. And so if something changes, they could potentially review that. So that's sort of the conservation and habitat status of the sage grouse. So it's a bird that was once widespread and very abundant, but has declined. That said, though, there are still an estimated 500,000 sage grouse in the United States, and Wyoming has the highest population in the world.
Yeah, and so we went to kind of southeast of Casper to pursue these birds. There's other places in the state to do it, but that's where our buddy from work had been. So that was our first intel. And like any trip, you know, you don't, even if it's locally, you scout animals, you spend some time trying to figure it out. And if we're going to go on a trip like this, this is... 12, what did we drive? 12, 14 hours.
Yeah, it was all every bit of that. Yeah.
You know, a person really needs to try to figure out ahead of time, is this worth going? So we did our scouting. We did our reconnaissance. So not only did we talk to our buddy from work, he'd been out here 5 or 6 years ago. So it wasn't a real recent trip. So, you know, upland birds, populations can change pretty quick. In some of them, the sage grouse are longer-lived species than quail or something. But so the next step was to call the local biologist, Casper, Wyoming.
Yeah. So what I did is I called the biologist out there at the Casper office, which is the area that we were going to hunt, and I visited with her. And I recommend that any traveling upland game bird hunter does this. Kyle and I, being biologists, we field these calls annually from folks that want to come to Missouri and quail hunt, and we're happy to talk about the population status. We're happy to talk about good places to hunt. We want people to be successful in hunting the birds that we manage. And she was no different. She was a great resource. She gave us excellent intel. She gave road names and locations to try without being super specific. I mean, she didn't give us coordinates and a spot on a map, which we didn't expect, and which I'm kind of glad. That's part of the pursuit, is, you know, going out there and looking for them. But she was great. So that was some of the, quote, scouting we did. And we did a lot of aerial scouting, to be honest. We used aerial photos of the landscape to scout, to look for the habitat components that our buddy and the biologist out there told us to look for. They said to look for specific components, and Kyle will touch on those in a minute. But we could view those from a map, really drill down and figure that out. And then once we got out there, we relied on our Onyx app, which was outstanding for our trip. I don't think we could have pulled the trip off without it, but we could have spent a lot more time reading paper maps. We would have spent a lot more time knowing, not knowing where we were at in terms of public and private, because while there was a lot of public land where we were at, there was a fair amount of public land that was intermixed. And that Onyx app was perfect for being able to pinpoint exactly where we were, pinpoint the roads that we could and couldn't drive, and pinpoint the landowner. So that's how we did our scouting, quote scouting, from 800 miles away, essentially.
Yeah, if you've never been out west, if you've never been to Wyoming, Montana, any of these states, whether it's antelope hunting, mule deer hunting, sage grouse hunting, this Onyx map deal is a game changer.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah. Unbelievable.
Absolutely.
So I'm old school, right? I'm the old guy in the group. So I've got paper maps, right?
Sure.
I send off for BLM paper maps.
Yeah,
and spend $20 on them. And I've been out here a couple times antelope hunting and got it done with those. But if you've never been out west, there's not fences on a lot of property lines. You have no idea when you cross from BLM ground to state ground to private land to Forest Service. You have no idea. And there's roads. There's two tracks. Some of them are open to public traffic. Once in a while, you're going through gates. You don't know if you're going through a private landowner's gate or a BLM gate. I mean, it would be difficult to do without Onyx maps. I highly recommend. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was a great resource. I'd never used Onyx before this trip. Downloaded it. It was super easy to download, and it worked like a charm. We were way out of cell service, and this app worked flawlessly. It showed us where we were at. We could put waypoints of grouse that we flushed, grouse that we saw, potential places that we wanted to hunt. It was great. So highly recommend Onyx Maps for anybody, not just going out west, but anybody. So that's kind of how we started our trip, did our scouting, and once we got out there, that's kind of how we got rolling. So the fun part for me, one of the fun parts, is the scouting. I enjoy talking to the biologist. I enjoy looking at maps. But the real fun part is the anticipation. When we finally left Laramie and we drove towards Casper, and we got up on this big plateau where we were going to start hunting, and we knew that, hey, we were in sage grouse country. This is it. Let's get rolling.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. We stayed at Laramie. That's another story we need to share real quick. So, you know, we thought, hey, we're both old enough, our days of sleeping on the ground or whatever, we're more than happy to get a motel room, right? I mean, we'll hunt all day, don't get me wrong, we're diehard at this, but we'll gladly spend a few extra bucks to get a motel. But so looking at the map, we're only going to be hunting like less than 60 miles from Casper.
46 miles from Casper.
So we're thinking, well, we'll just stay in Casper the whole time. This is no big deal, you know, we'll get a cheap motel somewhere, it's no big deal. Well, again, it's important to talk to people, because it turns out that it's only 40-some miles, but half of that is two tracks.
Yeah.
It's public roads. I mean, it's county roads, but it's two-track.
Two-track. Goes through a lot of open range.
So it's an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah, it was an hour and 45 minutes from our hunting spot to Casper.
So
46 miles.
So we kind of refigured and decided, well, on the way out, we're going to stay in Laramie. And that way we'll have about a two-hour drive. We'll get up in the dark and drive and be there, you know, kind of at dawn to start our first day. But it also caused us to bring a tent and some cots and kind of change the plan, you know. We did motel a night in Casper, but we slept out on the prairie a little bit too, which is fun. It's kind of neat. It kind of added to the whole trip, but
it added to the experience. Absolutely.
If we hadn't done our, you know, recon on this deal and just rolled out there, we would have wasted a lot of gas and a lot of hunting time driving back and forth. From Casper. So
That was where that long range scouting, talking to people that have been there. We talked to our buddy, and he's like, you probably don't want to stay in Casper. You better bring a tent.
And so that's another one of those deals. If you've never been out west, everything's bigger
and everything's further away than if you're from the east. There's no gas stations between. Right. You might want to bring a gas can. We didn't have any issue, but we were going to have to go to town by the end of day two, which we were going to town anyway to spend the night. But we wouldn't have had an option. We didn't have enough gas, and the nearest gas station was an hour and a half away.
Right.
So your guy needs to consider some of this when you're going to unknown places, and especially out west. Everything's just further and bigger than you think.
Yep, and cell service is an issue. You don't have cell service, so you got to prepare your family for that. You got to be prepared to not have cell service in a lot of places, which, you know, if you're prepared for it before you go, it's not a big deal. So, Kyle, let's talk about these birds. Let's talk about how we hunted them. What did we do on our first day? How do we attack this in a landscape where everywhere you looked was usable sage grouse space? We talk about usable space for quail. Well, for all upland game birds, usable space is the key. So we were in tens of thousands of acres of usable space everywhere we looked. How did we go about narrowing that down to figure out where we should start hunting?
Yep, we were really lucky on this part. So again, we had good intel. Our buddy, it's intimidating. You get out here, and our buddy had prepared us. He said, look, you can find some birds out in wide open sage. There's birds out there. There's birds scattered across this. But we are talking hundreds of square miles.
Yeah.
I mean, you just can't fathom it if you've never seen this. But there's these drainages. There's some just lower depressions and some dry creek beds through all of this. There's plateaus, and then there's coming off the plateau, they call them seeps out here, but they're just drainages.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key. So these birds, it turns out, like most prairie grouse species, they can be argued to be a shrub grouse species,
shrub
step. But anyway, this time of year, it's late September. They're eating a lot of grasshoppers still, but they also are looking for greens. They're looking for those greens because they don't have a fully developed gizzard, and we can get into that later, what they eat the rest of the year, but why they're called sage grouse. But anyway, these seeps, you know, it's arid country out here. I don't know what the average rainfall, but I'm guessing it's 15 inches or lower.
And that's got to be a lot of it snow, probably.
Right.
Precipitation has got to be like 12, 15 inches, probably.
So very arid environment. But these seeps just have just enough more moisture. There's some green plants out there. And we shot some video of that. Hopefully you guys get to see some of those videos. But there's Land and Legacy, we're always talking about diversity. Matt,
absolutely.
Adam, Frank, and I, diversity. Well, guess what? When you get into these seeps, all of a sudden there's more forbs. There's just all these extra plants.
Yep.
And so these seeps are the key. So we roll in. I mean, it's so dark 30 where it's starting to get light, and there's antelope everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's exciting to be out here.
Yeah.
There's elk off in some of these areas in the distance, just in the high plains. And we pull up onto this giant plateau, and we've got our buddies' directions of where we ought to be, and this biologist, and we pull down, and we find this nice seep. It's got some green grass, some kind of cord grass looking stuff in it, and different species. And I mean, we don't know, but here we go, and we make a little swing. I don't know, an hour walk, and saw some droppings.
Yep, and some fresh tracks and droppings. So there was birds around. Yep. You know, there was birds around, and we just didn't happen to move any. I think we walked 2.85 miles, according to Onyx, on that loop. And to get back to the greens a little bit, that's one of the real keys on sage-grouse conservation is these riparian areas. They're not riparian areas that we think about, you know, further east, but they are these drainages and these seeps, and they are absolutely critical for brood production and survival. The broods must have insects. It's critical, and they must have these greens. And so these green areas, these wet areas, are crucial for sage grouse conservation. So there's some groups out west that are working on improving these riparian areas, or these seeps for sage grouse, because it is such a crucial part of their life history. So we kind of found these areas. We hunted one, 2.85 miles. Didn't seem like it, but it was. And then we didn't do any good. So instead of striking out across the landscape, looking on Onyx map, say, okay, here's another area that meets this description, at least on an aerial photo. Let's hop over there.
Yep. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, we just look at the Onyx and, well, there's four seeps in a row. I say, hey, this is going to be perfect. We're going to go one on either side. So I guess our understanding, you know, was, again, we've never hunted these birds here in eastern Wyoming. Frank's hunted them in Montana. I've never hunted them in my life. So, all right, we'll get on either side of the seeps. We got three dogs running around, and, you know, we're within shooting distance of these seeps, so we're hunting 30 yards off either side.
Yeah, and
we've got four seeps on the map. Hey, we're going to go down one, up the next one, down one. You know, this will be another 2 or 3 hour swing here. And weather was good, by the way. I mean, we wasn't too hot.
No, it wasn't. It was probably upper 60s. Wind wasn't nuts. It was.
Yep. So
I mean, it was windy. It's the West. But
we're going to talk about some of that not so good weather here later in this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway. So the dogs aren't going to wear out too bad, you know, and it's still in the morning. So second seep we take, we're on either side and rolling along, and a bird just pops up in front of me. No dog work on it. Just happened, you know, the dog juked right when he should have juked left or whatever. Things happen. And up pops a bird. Wham, bam, I've got my first sage grouse. And we're celebrating. And I tell you what, one thing I've learned about hunting these birds is they don't see a lot of people.
Yeah, that's right.
So
that's
we're down there high-fiving, you know, and Frank's killed him a few years ago, but this is my first one.
Yeah,
so
we're looking at it.
We're checking it out, and he's congratulating me, and he's showing me how we can tell if it's a hen or a, you know, of course, the males are giant, but a juvie versus an adult and all that stuff, and we're kind of geeking out like we do because we're biologists, right? And we look up, and holy cow, there's two more of them.
Yeah, yeah, they were headed up the hill, walking up the hill out of the seep, and we just looked at each other and thought, all right, well, game on. So, and kind of an aside here, we're upland bird hunters. I've hunted birds for 30 years. You've hunted birds 35, probably.
Yep.
So, we've done it our whole lives. We're passionate about it. We're not purist in the sense of you have to have pristine dog work that points the birds. You're only going to shoot pointed birds. Some people choose to do that, and that's fine. If they want to do that, more power to them, and that's great. We don't we don't do that, and that's fine too. So, we see these grouse heading up the hill, and so we go in their direction, right? And they flush, right?
Yep. We flush, and bam, bam.
We get a double.
We shoot a double. So three shots fired, we got three grouse.
Yeah, so Kyle's got his limit.
Yep.
And so now it's just, I've got one bird left. And so we head back up to the truck, and we decide that we're going to go walk another couple of seeps to try to fill my limit. And we did. And it worked out well because we found some birds, and I was able to get my second bird, but it really keyed us in on where to hunt the next couple of days, because we knew we had birds in this long seep somewhere. I was able to get my bird, and then it really set the tone for the next couple of days.
Oh yeah. In fact, when Frank killed his second bird for the day, you know, your limit's only two. So, there was three other birds with that. And so, you know, we start doing the math, and we knew, we saw two were juvies, so they're probably going to hang around here, be somewhere close tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
He shot an adult hen, and another adult hen got away with two juvies because we were done with our limit. But anyway, it opened our eyes to, hey, we probably got to hunt here.
Yeah.
You know, here's another spot we can hunt. We already know we've got birds. So anyway, it keyed us in on the next spot and the next day.
Yeah.
And we can talk more about that here in a second, day two, day three, kind of how things played out. But the second part of this trip is blue grouse and dusky grouse. Well, that's what they're called now. Audubon calls them dusky grouse instead of blue grouse.
But, so you'll hear some consternation in our voices as we talk about this adventure here.
So we, you know, coming out here blind, I'm not totally blind. We had really good intel, in fact, but still, never laying eyes on this landscape. You don't know. And our buddy had, they struggled a little bit on sage grouse and then got a hold of the biologist. I don't think they did all their homework before they got out here and maybe kind of did it in backwards order, but whatever. They finally got it figured out. And he said, hey, once you figure out these sage grouse, again, they haven't seen a lot of humans. It and you can only kill two.
Yeah, and so once you figure it out and key in on what the landscape or the habitat they're using, they don't travel a lot. It's not like they pack up and head across land because they don't need to. They have all the resources they need there.
Right.
So it really narrows your search image down.
Well, and bear in mind, we're in the state that has the largest population, remaining population.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in a really good spot.
Yeah, we were hunting in an area that had thousands of sage grouse within the landscape.
Yeah. Easy. So, I mean, you can kill them other places, but we're on the X, right? I mean, we're hunting them in good. So, part of that is, hey, if you're really so we're up here the first day. If you're really successful any of these days, what are you going to do the rest of the day? No, I don't want to sit around and have to stare at Frank all day.
No.
Nobody wants to have to do that.
No, that's absolutely terrible.
Right. So, you know, our buddy said, hey, we chased these blue grouse. Now, again, this is 5 or 6 years ago. But so we're fortunate enough. We've killed our two sage grouse apiece by noon the first day.
Yep.
You know, we've rolled into this, never seen this landscape. I don't know how many antelope we saw.
Oh.
It's just ridiculous. It was opening, I guess it was the second day of antelope season for the unit we're in. And shockingly, we're going to have to check into that. I've done it twice. Frank's never done the antelope. I'm getting sidetracked here. As Adam would say, I'm going down a rabbit trail. Yeah. He likes to do that. But
My son, Caleb, wants to shoot an antelope, wants to go antelope hunting. So,
oh, my gosh. This unit was filthy with antelope. But anyway, that just adds to the experience. You know, there's just antelope around every turn and really not that many hunters. So
I was surprised.
I got to assume this is one of those units that take several preference points. But anyway, so we've got our sage grouse killed. High fiving's done. We've taken some pictures. I think we even took a little video that hopefully Adam or Matt puts on Facebook or something. Us two old guys, we don't even have Facebook. So,
nope.
So all right, now, you know, game on. We're going to go kill these blue grouse. And our buddy says the first day they went after blue grouse, they never saw one.
Mm-hmm.
But they were hunting too high of elevation. And then once they got it figured out, same kind of deal. Once they got dialed in, it was game on.
Yeah. So let me stop you here quick.
Yep.
You mentioned high elevation.
Yep.
So let's talk quickly about blue grouse.
Yes, absolutely.
So blue grouse are a little different. When you think about migrating up and down a mountain, you think in the summertime, big game animals migrate up a mountain to the cool environments, and in the winter they migrate down. So blue grouse or dusky grouse do the opposite. So the females, they migrate down from the mountain in the springtime, and they nest at the edge of the forest and sage and grassland. So these intermountain bowls of sage or the bottom of where the forest meets the sage landscape down off the mountains, that's where these females nest, because the resources are so good. There's tons of greens, tons of insects, tons of seeds, perfect places to raise a brood. The males stay up there, right? They don't, after the females get bred and move down the mountain to nest, the males kind of stay up in the forest. Now, as winter approaches, the reverse happens. These blue grouse start to move up in elevation, and as they do, they change almost entirely to a diet of green, of spruce and fir needles. So they feed on fir and spruce needles all winter. So they have a reverse migration. So if you're hunting them high this time of year in late September, probably not going to find many, so you need to go low.
Yeah, really, interesting and different kind of behavior, right? We don't hear that much of anything with any kind of game, really, kind of a complete opposite of what you would think. So so we had a little bit of intel, not as good as intel.
Yeah.
We were told, you know, hunt the asp right at the seam where sagebrush turns into start at the base of the mountains. So, yep. So there's some mountains, actually, surprisingly.
Yeah, it's called the Laramie Hills.
Yeah, I've been arguing they're rugged hills. They're not really mountains. Right. But
by day two, he was saying they're mountains.
Day two, we got into a place. Oh, my gosh. My blisters on my feet prove that they're mountains. But anyway, off we go. So it's day one. We're going to try to find some of these blue grouse. We've got a search image in our mind. Again, Frank's talked to the biologist. We've talked to our work buddy. We've got this search image. Both of them have confirmed the same information.
Yep.
So we're thinking, oh, yeah. You know, now we're cocky, right?
Yeah.
We've killed 4 sage grouse before noon. We've got this all figured out.
It's good as over.
And sage grouse, by the way, you know, you're going to have to work at them to get them to be much for table fare.
They
eat a lot of sage. I mean,
yeah.
They're pretty stout. But these blue grouse, this is white meat. I mean, this is like a
Bob White quail, like times 4.
Yeah, so we're pretty jazzed up, and your limit's 3 of these. So we're going to be here 3 days. We're going home with 9 blue grouse apiece, and oh my gosh, they're going to be good. He's already promised his grandpa.
Yep, on the way out.
He's going to smoke one for him. It's going to be so good. Oh yeah, so we got big plans. So off we go to the base of the mountains. And, well, our first problem is, there's a transition of sage into pine and conifer, you know, different conifers. But we're struggling to even find much of these aspen stringers that we're told to look. We're supposed to be seeing these aspen stringers. Well, now, Frank and I, three years ago, went to rough grouse hunting in Wisconsin.
Yep.
So we kind of know we've got this picture in our head, right? And we know blue grouse are a little different, but so we kind of got an idea of what we're looking
for. We're thinking young aspen, right?
Yep. So off we go, and we're struggling to find it, and we're driving up crappy roads and beating up the truck.
We stopped to eat lunch.
Yeah, we stopped to eat lunch, and an elk hunter's coming down the road. And yeah, so we've got antelope season open, elk hunt season's open. There's all kinds of stuff going on out here. The West is an amazing place. But so we talk to this elk hunter, and we get pretty jazzed up. He's telling us some information, but the problem is he's telling us about you got to go miles and miles up this clear on up to the top of the mountain, which does not fit the pattern. Late September, they're supposed to be at the base of the mountain, right? They're not supposed to be at the top of the mountain. Well, a little extra intel on it turns out we decided he's a pathological liar by the time we get done with
this. He was an exaggerator, but yeah. So that kind of...
he told us a lot of things that didn't add up. He told us about rough grouse being up there. Well, they don't even have rough grouse in this part of the state.
Yeah.
He told us about a lot of different information that just didn't add up. So anyway, we kind of take his advice with a grain of salt. We still don't really know what we're doing. So we try walking a spot partway up this mountain, hill, whatever you want to call it. Probably the worst thing could have happened. A grouse flushes.
Yep, grouse flushes.
And dang if it flies right over my head and I don't kill the
stupid
thing.
I shoot twice. You miss it.
I'm still not happy. I'll be mad about this 20 years later, because as this podcast continues, you're going to find out that I really needed to kill that blue grouse because we didn't get a whole lot of opportunities. But anyway, so I whiff.
Yep.
So off we go. Now we're going to go on up. We're going to try to check out this elk hunter story, run into some other elk hunters.
Yep, we run into some elk hunters from Wisconsin, and we talk to them, and they say, yeah, we saw this guy. We know where he's at, but he's way up the mountain. We've been camped here for a couple days. They'd already harvested 2 elk, really nice. They had been camping in different spots of the forest, kind of trying to find out They said, we've been here 2 days and have maybe seen a grouse. I'm like, ugh. But then they say, but down the mountain, up this one creek, where we were there a few days ago, we stepped into a pretty good pile of them. And his buddy said, yeah, I saw some there too, and I took a different spur. And they showed us on the Onyx. They were running Onyx too. They said, look, take this draw. And so we had eyewitness intel of blue grouse in this draw. They didn't say when they saw them. They'd been there for, I don't know, 16 days or something. So they didn't say, hey, we saw them day two and whatever. But so we headed back down the mountain, past some really good looking stuff that we decided not to hunt because we had this really this spotlight. Hey, there's blue grouse here. Let's go. So we finally wind our way back in there and get there. Well, as we get there, it's like we're starting to see bird dog tracks. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. And then they talked about that they saw some hunters from Kansas kind of in that same area. And we saw them leaving when we were hunting our first day. So long story short, we go hunt this draw that they put the X on the map, climbed up this rugged, crossed this creek. It's called Deer Creek. Crossed it, went up this draw, way up this mountain, back down. No blue grouse. Didn't flush a one.
Really scenic. In fact,
it was beautiful.
Took
some
great pictures. Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful area. Yeah. No blue grouse.
Nope.
So now.
And by this time, it's time to head back and make camp, right?
Yeah.
Because we haven't put up our tent yet. We haven't done any of that. So it was
right.
It was getting towards dark. So we thought, well, fluke deal. Elk hunters are seeing them. We have good intel. Game on tomorrow. We're going to get our grouse, our sage grouse, figured out. After we do that, we're going to go back, and we're going to find more bluegrass.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not quite as cocky about this whole deal now. We're still thinking the blue grouse are going to get it tomorrow.
Yep.
Come on.
Elk hunters are stepping right into them. We've got dogs. So
we're lifelong, combined 60-some years of upland bird hunting experience. We're both wildlife biologists. By golly, blue grouse are going to get it tomorrow.
Yeah, we're going to figure this out.
It's just a matter of time. So, yep, we go set up camp. Conveniently, it's Wyoming, right? So we're setting up camp, and the wind's blowing about 30 miles an hour.
There's a cold front coming in.
It's a nice night to camp and sleep in a tent. And I'm old enough that I can sleep on the ground when I have to. I do it when I go out and fight fire out west sometimes.
Yep, when you're playing hero.
But when I'm being a hero, saving lives, right?
Right, right.
Saving babies, saving homes.
Yeah.
But we had it pretty cush. I mean, we had cots.
Growing up, I slept on the ground or a sleeping bag. Never a cot. So this was pretty good. And my bird dog, Stella, she claimed the cot first thing. We got him set up.
Yeah.
We let her out to do her thing and eat, and I thought, well, I'll just let her hang out around camp a while. She's not going to run off. Next thing I know, she's claiming the cot. She's up there. And being a softie, I just can't throw her off the cot. I mean, she had big eyes looking at me like, I'm settled here. So.
Yeah. Go figure. Female dogs. So I've got two male dogs on this trip. I've got my own short hair and my dad's short hair, and, they got to sleep in the dog box.
Yep.
But little Princess gets to sleep at the foot of his bed.
Princess Stella. It was a long night. I didn't have much leg room, I'll tell you that. But at least she slept well.
So, part of this is, you got to consider, we'd already planned on, what if we kill limits of sage grouse? You need to know all the laws and all the rules,
Absolutely.
Right? So most states and most species, your possession limit will be triple the bag limit.
Yeah.
So blue grouse, your limit's 3. We're going to be here 3 days. We could go home with 9 grouse. The possession limit's 9. But with sage grouse, because they're a little more concerned with the population, they don't want people staying out here for 4 or 5 days and killing limits. So the limit's 2, but the possession limit's only 4.
Right.
So it's kind of a game changer, and we knew that coming into it. So, night 1 of camp, guess what? We had sage grouse fajitas.
Sage grouse fajitas. Kyle, Mr. Prepared. He had brought everything you need for fajitas, from the banana peppers to the onions to the fajita mix, tortillas, cheese. Look, I didn't need to bring anything except myself, right?
Yeah.
And harvest some sage grouse. And so we had fajitas, sage grouse fajitas, marinated them, cut them up, cut them on the grill. We brought us a little cooker, and we made sage grouse fajitas in the camp night. Good. I mean.
Yep. Well, yep. I've learned over the years not to count on you for much. So anyway, yeah. I just bring everything anyway.
He planned it. We would have, we would have had a peanut butter and jelly and grilled sage grouse.
No, but it was important because, you know, we don't know if we're going to kill. We're going to be there 3 days. So potentially we could end up with 6 sage grouse apiece. So we don't know if that's going to happen or not.
Mm-hmm.
But after killing them by noon the first day, there's a good chance we're getting dialed in. It could go downhill. We don't know.
Yep.
But we don't want to get, if we don't eat them, and then the next day we kill them. Now we're going to have to eat something.
Yeah,
you need to be prepared. It doesn't matter where you go. You know, I know buddies that go waterfowl hunting in North Dakota, and you can have 3 days limits of ducks. I mean, either way, you got to plan for that. If you're going to go on a 4 or 5 day hunt and your possession limit's only 3 days worth of limits or 2 days worth of limits, you're going to have to plan on making stuff, cooking stuff, making them into jerky. You're going to have to do something.
Yeah. Look at the regulations. You know, some states separate and identifiable. So we had baggies, Sharpie. We would write, hey, Frank sage grouse, Kyle sage grouse, the date. We would leave a wing on the sage grouse after we got done cleaning it. So you got to know this stuff before you go out there in case you get checked.
Anybody. Yep. I mean, we're biologists that work for a state agency. We really don't need to be getting tickets, but nobody needs to be getting tickets. It's pretty simple. Stay legal and you know, just know the regs. But and these things are strong tasting. I mean, they're strong smelling. So fajitas is a pretty good way to use them.
Fajitas is a good way. Marinate them.
I mean, if you had to cook this thing like the old-time 1800s cowboys over a spit, oof.
It'd be tough.
It'd be rough.
It'd be tough, but
I'm not going to lie. They're not the best table fare, but
you
can work at it.
Yep, and if you do it right, they're good. They're good. That you just like anything else. It's like, you know, shooting a running antelope. Probably not going to be the best, right?
Got to
know how to take care of your meat. So, these, if you prepare them right, they're good, and that's what we did.
Yep. So we get through, you know, first night camp. We have some fajitas. The wind blows all night. We sleep terrible.
That's cold front came through. Yep.
Pretty common. It especially at my age. I don't know, not old, but 47.
Yeah, you're old.
You know, I wake up 6 or 7 times in my own bed, let alone sleeping on a cot. So
yeah.
Flop around a little bit, but hey, we're in Wyoming. We're gung ho. So by golly, we're up at dark. You know, dark 30 and. And we pack camp up, and little Princess Stella's got to get back in the dog box.
Yeah, she didn't like that.
And we go to where we saw that family group, and day two, here we go.
Yeah, we kicked the dogs out, and we thought, well, why do we know within this seep and this drainage is probably a family group of grouse, and maybe 1,000 yards up, maybe another family group. We're just going to work this and see how it happens. Maybe it takes us, we walk the whole seat, don't get anything, prepared for that, so off we go.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Nope. And we have a good start. We don't go very far, and we're into birds.
Yeah.
And in fact, I guess that was the day that, they were in the bottom of the seat.
Yeah.
And I mean, this stuff, I'm talking, we're walking the edges of it, but the bottom of the seep is...
Well,
vegetation's 3 inches tall.
Yeah, 3 inches tall, and it was rocks.
Yeah.
It was if we had been looking up, there's a reasonable chance we would have seen them.
Yeah, I didn't expect
because
that.
Because we thought, hey, they're going to be on the edges so they can shoot back under a tall sagebrush when they need to, right?
Yeah, so a couple of them pop up out of there, and fortunately, one of them just flies off. Another one just goes and lands, you know, and my dad's short hair runs right up there, and of course I'm running as fast as I can to stay up with, and locks up.
Yeah, it was a beautiful. Nice, I was watching it from across the draw, and then Kyle's dog backed. It was beautiful. I've seen some points on sage grouse, and this was a classic upland. What you want for an upland bird hunt with a dog?
Yep. So, wham bam, get that one killed, and And off we go. You know, whoo-hoo, that was exciting. Yeah. And we hadn't been at it 10 minutes. We get our first bird up in the air. So off we go, and we continue up this seep, and we hunt a little more. And sure enough, there's this seep has birds in it.
Yeah.
And
we get into another family group up there.
Yep. I think was that, I guess we shot a, was I that got when it. We shot a double, or was that the next day? Anyway.
No, I got a double. No, you finished up.
That's, yeah.
You shot another one, and then I went a little bit further and got into a pair and shot, well, there was more than a pair, but
that's
I
right.
got a double on the rise.
That's right. I was wham, bam, done, and I was going to walk back to the truck and get the GoPro and try to film him.
Yeah, he's going to be my cameraman. He's going to follow me around.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's when you slapped one way out there, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh, yeah. And that, and we're not, hey, don't take us wrong here. We're not encouraging unethical shots or anything, but any grouse species, the range is a little different, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Whether it's sharptail, we've shot sharptails, prairie chickens. You'll hear another podcast, hopefully, about prairie chickens. We're going to talk about that. We're going to hunt Nebraska for an afternoon and a morning. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But these sage grouse, sharptails, or any of these open prairie grouse, you got a little more range.
Yeah.
We're shooting 6-shot.
Yep.
You know, heavy load, fives or sixes, good heavy pheasant loads. But you can kill a grouse that, you know, you don't shoot a pheasant at 60 yards.
No.
They're just going to fly on. They don't care. At 50, 60 yards, you can put a grouse down.
Yeah, and there's something about them. I've noticed it with, like Kyle said, hunting sharptails and prairie chickens that, you know, you can get a little more. You know, a 40-yard shot on a prairie grouse is not unreasonable. And, in fact, common.
Yes, a lot of them are flushing at 35.
Yes,
so.
Because they can be spooky in wind. So, yeah. And if you say, well, I'm not going to take that 35 to 40-yard shot, well, there's going to be days you may not get a shot at a grouse, a prairie grouse.
Absolutely.
So we had one of those long shots I made and then another one that was fairly close. And so we were done. So we spent a little time. We made some videos that hopefully you'll see on Landon Legacy Instagram or Facebook or however Matt and Adam choose to do it. So we're going to go spend the night in Casper. But before that, we're going to go up the mountain for blue grouse because we've kind of got the search image. And this, we've got the time. But the weather starts to change a little bit. A cold front to move through, dropped the temperature probably 20 degrees. And it was a light misting rain, kind of just barely drizzling where we were at down on the prairie. But you could look up the mountain and you could see a little bit more clouds. But we thought, okay, we have time. Let's head up there. The roads aren't great, so you can't be out there when it's raining or you won't get out. But we knew based on the precipitation level we had, we could get up the mountain and we could get after them.
Yeah, so yeah, need a four-wheel drive. As we're going deeper into the mountains, which was, I don't know, what, 20, 30 minutes from where we're killing these sage grouse, we got to go. But, if there's going to be any moisture, you're going to need a four-wheel drive. You're not getting out of here. They just get greasy on top.
Yeah, yeah.
And, again, I mentioned you're on two tracks and just a lot of not really – even the main roads, that they're not really gravel roads like we think of back home.
No,
they're
just
kind of a
fine, gravelly sand, dirt,
lust. And they just get a real slimy grease
gumbo
on top. So.
And you slide, you lose control, you're back in, just you're done.
Yep, so off we go. We had seen some stuff when we came down the mountain from the Wisconsin boys going to their spot that they told us to find these blue grouse. So we'd made note of some, man, that's the picture,
that's
right?
It.
That's the search image we're after, but we didn't hunt it that day one, so we're going to go hunt it day two. We're going to kill these blue grouse. It's game on. We're not playing around anymore. So we buzz up there, and luck would have it.
Yeah,
we're
absolutely.
Driving along. A coyote squirts out
and
starts running down the two-track ahead of us.
Yep, just like they always do.
And flushes a group of birds. Now, we can't tell. We're a little far away, but they're in the sage, but they're within...
They're 50, They're 35 to 40 yards from aspen, right?
Yeah, so
and conifers.
Logic, of course, we're biologists. We've got this all figured out. I mean, those got to be bluegrass.
Yeah. Sage grouse don't belong in the woods.
No self-respecting sage grouse is going to be right here next to the trees, right?
Right.
So, well, they just kind of go over the crest of a little hump, and we can't tell if they went in the woods, but we know they're in there. They're either just inside the woods or they landed just short. So, this is game on.
Yep, we got. Yep.
And I think there was six or seven. So, coyote helped us out here, and so we pull up on X Maps again. Man, there's a private land, public land right here. There's a seam of national forest and private lands. Oh, we're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
We park right on the line. We're going to hunt back east, and off we go. Well, we don't go 200 yards, and we know we're getting right to where these birds
dogs
ought to be.
Dogs are getting a little birdie.
Yep, dogs get birdie, and I'll be danged. What? You step into the middle of, they're popping up like popcorn.
Yeah, sage grouse. Just big bombers just flying past me.
he's already shot his limit, so he's watching them sail away.
Yep.
But then, oddly enough, there's one bluegrouse
in this
group. There's
one random bluegrouse with him. Yeah.
So.
Nutty.
Anyway, he's out of range for Frank, so I end up getting to kill this bluegrouse.
Yep.
So, woohoo! Oh, it's game on now.
Yep.
Right, because now we've got this new search image. We're lower in elevation. Everything's fitting right.
And we've got one.
So I've killed one. All right. That miss the day before is monkey off my... I'm still mad about it. But hey, I've got a blue grouse in my hand.
Yeah.
This is exciting. And my goodness, we've got probably 2 or 3 hours of good-looking habitat
absolutely.
In this spot to walk. So... this is it. We've figured it out. We're going to kill them. Well, turns out that's not how it works.
It was a light misting rain. It was wind probably 15 to 20 miles an hour out of the north. And so you put two and two together, you can tell the conditions weren't great. It's cold. We were both wet. And in those conditions, wet, rainy, whether it's a hard rain, which we don't hunt in, but a misting kind of light rain, Kyle and I have hunted game birds long enough to know those some of the worst conditions to hunt game birds is in the rain. They don't move. They don't leave a lot of scent. They just hunker down. A covey quail will sit under a plum thicket and not move.
Well, and it seems like they won't even fly. I mean, unless the dog pinpoints them. I mean, they'll let you walk 10 yards away. Unless the dog points them, they'll just let you walk right past them when it's... But, you know, hey, we're a long ways from home. We're not just going to go... Again, I don't really want to stare at Frank. I'm staring at him now doing this podcast.
Yeah.
So I don't want to go stare at him in a motel room or in the truck and play cards or whatever.
Yeah.
So
let's...
By God, we're committed.
Let's continue this walk in the rain. And so that was a double-edged sword because we start doing this and not finding any grouse. And we walk a lot of perfect stuff and we're like, man, this should be it. What's going on? And we're thinking, you know, these grouse are being seen by elk hunters. Last two elk hunters we talked to saw them. It's not like they're a ghost bird. They're there. They should be fairly abundant. But we're not seeing anything. And we walked a ton of aspen stringers and up and down hills and aspen stringers. But we have in the back of our mind, it's raining. What if they're popped up in the trees and they're not moving? What if we're walking by them and they're not flushing? So we thought, okay, maybe we're doing it right. But the conditions are bad. So at about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, we decide, okay, we're wet. We're going to take off while we can still get out of this place because we were way back up in the mountains and it was starting to get greasy. Let's get out of here, head to Casper, get in our room, and then we're going to attack blue grouse tomorrow. So off to Casper we head. We get to Casper. We thought, okay, we're here. We just drive by the Game and Fish Department office, and on a whim, we decide to whip in there and talk to the biologist there. We talk to the regional supervisor, talk to him about bluegrass, like, hey, what are we doing this right? Are we doing this wrong? What's going on? He says, I'll tell you what, I got a place closer to town, closer to Casper, that has bluegrass. We've been doing some work up, some habitat work up there. It's up on this place called Casper Mountain. Showed us right on the Onyx where to go. And so we look at each other. This is probably 3 o'clock. We think, well, do we go to the room and maybe rest up a little bit, hit it fresh in the morning, and then we say, no, we're going up Casper Mountain. We're going to at least look at it, if nothing else. And remember, it's cloudy, it's fog. You could see maybe 100 yards, yeah, probably.
Horrible conditions.
So we get up there. We walk a place that he showed us to walk. It was a nightmare. More about that later, but
it was just so steep.
It was just steep.
It was unwalkable. It was probably Ed Grouse in it, but it was unwalkable.
So we do some scouting, then we head back to Casper, and then we get a good night's sleep. Then we head back up the next morning because we were going to hunt some other places that we had seen the night before. And so as we were driving, we saw these elk hunters from Tennessee coming down the road. So I flashed them I flashed my lights. Don't need that. No. So I flashed my lights, jerk, and got them to stop. And we said, hey, have you been seeing any blue grouse? And they said, well, they didn't really know what a blue grouse was. I mean, they had seen some grouse-like birds they had saw or when they were hunting. And then they said, well, I'll tell you what. We've been seeing some grouse kind of out in the open in the sage, but I think it's sage grouse because they're kind of walking around in the open. So we say, okay, thanks. And then we leave, and then, they wave us down, right?
Yeah, so we're going the same direction. We'd seen some stuff we wanted to hunt, and they flag us down. Nice of them to do that.
Super nice guys.
I was talking to them, and they said, well, we think we're seeing sage grouse. Well, they told me they're cow elk hunting. And I said, you're seeing sage grouse?
Because
it doesn't add up, right?
We were at 8,000 feet.
Yeah, it did not add up in my head. And I said, well, are these birds around the woods? And they're just, well, no, I mean, kind of out in the open. And anyway, so that's how the first conversation happened. Well, we don't go 200 yards down the road, and they flag us down. I get back out in the truck, and the guy says, hey, we got to thinking. You said if they're around the woods, those are blue grouse. Yeah. They said, we watched some. We thought they looked like the size of baby turkeys and turkey poults. And yep. Well, we were sitting watching a big open field and watched some walk record. We just thought they were sage. I said, nope, those are blue grouse. And they said, yeah, they walked right into the timber.
Yep.
Absolutely. That's what we're after.
Yep.
So game changer here. You know, the regional supervisor had sent us to this general area.
Yes.
But now we've got intel. So once again, you know, don't be afraid to talk to people that are around.
Right. Absolutely.
This is great stuff. And in fact, it's almost puzzling. We had some a dad that had a couple kids that were sage grouse hunting.
Yep, on the last day we were there.
We're sitting there celebrating our third day's limit, which we haven't even talked about yet, you know, and we're off to the side of a two track, and they drive right by and don't even roll down the window and talk to us. Now, why would you not? Because we could have put them on some birds.
Yeah.
We had just finished limits and knew where some birds were.
We had spots that we knew where birds were that we didn't hunt because we didn't have enough bag limit to get to them.
Yeah, and they've got, you know, a dog box, and they drive right past us. They drive past us 10 miles an hour. Yep. Don't even roll down the window and talk to us. Man, don't be afraid to take the opportunity to ask and get some intel. But so we get this intel. These guys say, yep, we watched some of them walk right across, three of them walk right across this open field. Never did see a cow elk, unfortunately for them. But so here we go. And, we're at 7,900 feet at this point.
Yep.
And it is blowing 40 miles an hour, it's 45 degrees.
Yeah, it is cold. It is windy. I had a sock hat on and a coat. You had a coat on and a hood, gloves.
Brutal.
So it was brutal. And then we get there and we look, and it's straight up and down. But we go after it, head down this seam. We're not hunting 20 minutes. Blue grouse gets up. I get my blue grouse.
Yep.
I'm high-fiving, and I think, okay, we got this now.
Actually, I whiff at the blue grouse.
You whiff, you miss.
Thank goodness.
Yes.
Because then he kills it. Yes. He's with the follow-up shot. Because if I had killed it, turns out this is the only blue grouse Frank kills.
Yes.
And the one I kill on day two was the only one I kill. So
so we walk, but we think we got it figured out.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We
game on.
So we walk down this mountain. with the understanding that we have to walk back up. But it's great looking habitat. We're here. We may never be in this spot again in our lives. Let's do it. And I guarantee you I will never again be in that spot in my life because I won't go back. It was I don't know how to tell percent grade. It was just steep.
It was
no air.
It was rough. Yeah.
High altitude.
Yeah. And with the wind blowing, you know, you just can't catch your breath.
We were walking all the way into the wind on the way back to the truck. We flushed some grouse. They got up wild.
We ended up, Dad's dog had a nice point, but unfortunately he's 80 yards from us.
Yeah.
And we're scurrying over there, and of course they blow up. And I mean, he didn't pounce on them. He did his job. But they blow up.
They catch the wind, and they're.
Oh yeah,
they're. I don't. Gone. They may still be flying the way those things got the wind. So, we come out of there. We decide this is probably the worst idea we've ever had. So we stop and we eat lunch. We walk another couple of spots, and we think, okay. We've done the bluegrass thing. We're done, right?
Yeah.
We're both beat. We've been walking up. Side slopes, we're done. So we eat lunch, and we head back to our sage grouse spot. A couple things. If you're an elk hunter or hunting big game out west, and you're in the mountains, and you think, well, these idiots, we eat camp meat full of grouse. That's what we eat. For camp meat, we shoot them out of the tree with a bow. We eat grouse camp. Everybody, the elk hunters talk about the abundant blue grouse, shooting them out of a tree with a bow, camp meat, no big deal. Couple things. We were on the very eastern range of the blue grouse in Wyoming.
Yeah.
Maybe the very eastern range of blue grouse in the country.
That's what the regional biologist told us. Hey, there's a lot better places to do this.
We've got them. They're not too abundant. They're an opportunity while you're here. Why not?
Well, yeah, what else are we going to do? We killed our sage grouse.
I don't want to look at you. You don't want to look at me.
Right, right.
Let's go after these. So, lest you hear this and think, well, why can't these morons kill bluegrass? They're easy. Well, we were on the very eastern end of the range. Population was down. They had a wet, cold spring. Population was down. Low densities all around. So, in our defense... That's what we're claiming anyway.
Yeah, and since our buddy was here, so once they figured them out, they actually, the last day, killed limits. Three of them killed 9 of these blue grouse, no problem. Well, that was 5 or 6 years ago. So according to the regional biologist, bird numbers are not good. And in fact, to the point of, he said, you may get into a brood of 5 or 10 birds in a stringer of aspen, and... it may be 5 stringers of aspen to the east before you find the next brood.
Yeah, and these aren't just the next draw. I mean, they may be...
No, it may be 5 miles away. So, you know, when bird numbers are good, they're in every aspen stringer, and when they're not, they're not. So we just happened to hit it wrong, you know, but we both got one kill.
We both got our blue grouse.
Checked it off the list, list.
I got my grandpa his grouse that I promised him on the way out here, so.
Yeah, I was going to have to feed his grandpa my grouse, which
I already claimed it.
That was a bunch of baloney. I wasn't even going to get to eat it. So, anyway, we do a reverse. So, this is day 3, you know, this is it.
This is the last day we're going to be in Wyoming.
We're leaving, so... all right, we finally punt and said, hey, it rained all night, but hey, the wind's blowing like this, the roads have probably dried out, so we say, we're going to do a reverse hunt, let's roll back, we got to go south anyway.
Yeah, we're going home, we're going right through our sage grouse spot.
So we roll back to our sage grouse spot, and we go out, you know, we find another seep.
We're hunting seeps in the morning. We found them. These birds aren't making long range movements from a seep way out and then coming back the next morning. They're probably around there somewhere. So we just say, what better do we know than just let's just find a seep and let's go after it.
Right. So we've been there 2 days and we haven't seen just sage grouse flying around trading spots.
No. Right.
Math in our head says these birds are going to be within, they can't be more than a few hundred yards of these seeps, right?
The biologist in us knows that these birds have all the resources that they need. Why waste resources flying somewhere else? So to, you know, to be up in the prairie in the middle of the afternoon, let's stay around the seep. So we just did our morning tactic in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Under the seeps.
And it works out. We have a successful hunt. I think we shoot a double. We each kill one on the first flush and had a nice point. Again, Dad's short hair. He's done all the work here for some reason, but he covers about three times more ground than all the other dogs. But
made a nice point. We got a double on that point.
Yep. Wish we'd had the camera rolling for that because we get a great point. Bam, bam, we shoot a double, and we don't walk another, I don't know, a couple hundred yards, and Frank finishes out with a nice nice kill. And
so at this point, I'm done. So I go back to the truck, and then I drop, Giles says, drop me off on this one seam and pick me up at the other end. So that's what I did. I was leaning back, taking a nap in the truck, and was going to pick him up when he got done walking the seam. And he was almost within shooting range of the truck when his last grouse.
Yeah, so I probably walked, I don't know, another mile or so, and on a piece of a seep, and I'm probably the last 1,500 yards from quitting on this spot, and up jumps a nice hen. In fact, it's the nicest one that I killed this whole trip.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna try to. I'm a rookie bird taxidermist, so I'm going to try to do a dead mount with this bird.
He did a pheasant for me. It turned out good, surprisingly good. I was surprising, yeah.
So anyway, that was the end of it. So turned out it was a good thing we had fajitas that first night because we needed to relieve some room. I mean, we killed 3 days' worth of sage-grouse limits, and we didn't want to be over our possession limit, and we're not. We're coming home with four sage-grouse apiece, and we each got the coveted bluegrouse.
We each got our bluegrouse.
Ah, man, yeah. If you want to hunt bluegrouse, I'm not bagging on eastern Wyoming, but go to Colorado.
Western Wyoming. Go further west.
Go into the Rocky Mountains, not the Laramie Hills. There's better places to do it, and people talk about killing limits. But anyway.
It was fun. Hunting on that mountain was fun.
And again, we had nothing else to do all afternoon. So either you're going to go try to find prairie dog towns or do something else. Yeah. But anyway, wrap it up. Man, what a great trip.
It was absolutely phenomenal trip. We saw so much wildlife. The West is so great. We were in great habitat. Public land. It's amazing that this land is available for everyone to hunt. This bird lives on private land too, but some of the best populations of sage grouse in the world are on public land, BLM land, and that's where we exclusively killed these birds. So a lot of public, just a fantastic hunt.
Yep, had a great time. Hey, do your homework before any trip like this. Cannot recommend any more. Onyx Maps is, I cannot tell you how valuable that was. So use that stuff. I don't care if you're mule deer hunting out here or you're antelope hunting. If you're going anywhere, but particularly out west, this Onyx Maps is a game changer.
It was great. Do your preseason scouting, and it's probably going to be from a distance, but you can call the biologist, you can call locals, you can look on aerial photos, whether it's on Onyx or Google, whatever. Look for these seeps. Look for these habitat changes. Save yourself some time. And can't recommend enough sage grouse hunting. It's a species that is iconic bird of the West, the biggest grouse in North America. Excellent sport. A wonderful time. I can't recommend it enough.
Yep, I had a great time. Really enjoyed it. It was great to always enjoy hunting trips with Frank anyway.
Yep.
But man, we're just fortunate to have families that let us do this kind of stuff and support us.
Yeah, absolutely. My wife is really great about not supporting my hunting passion.
So. Mine too, and to be able to take a few days off of work and come do this, gosh, what a wonderful trip. And I'll remember this for the rest of my life.
Yep. So we're going to sign off. We've got some Nebraska prairie chicken hunting ahead of us, and we'll probably be back on doing a podcast about that. But thanks, guys, for sticking with us, and we'll see you next time.
Yep.